Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Robert Moeller and Jerry Dunn, partners for 2 years. Robert is a Sonoma County native, and he was among a handful of people who started the Sonoma County Lesbian and Gay News in his living room in 1978. We want to welcome Robert.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Jerry, a composer, lost his home in the 2017 Tubbs fire and had to rebuild his life. After losing everything, he met Robert and has since written a 19-minute, four-movement symphony about the fire. And we will hear little snippets of that throughout the show. So welcome, welcome, Jerry.
Thank you. I'm very flattered to have been asked.
We have lots to learn about Jerry and Robert. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of January 3rd, 2021. The state of New York has enacted legislation that will require public single-occupancy bathrooms to become available to all people, regardless of their gender. This means that trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people can use the facilities without restrictions. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the bill on December 23rd. It affects buildings belonging to school districts, charter schools, state or community colleges, restaurants and bars, mercantile establishments, factories, and any other state-owned or operated business. The governor's signature on the bill comes after it passed both Senate and Assembly, with more than 100 LGBT groups expressing their support for the legislation in an open letter to the governor earlier in December. The states of Vermont, Illinois, and California already have either proposed or passed similar laws. New York's new law becomes effective this March. And an analysis of the online retail giant Amazon's nonprofit partnership program called Amazon Smile has found that it has become a key fundraising space for organizations with anti-LGBTQ and anti-abortion ambitions. A chapter of the American Family Association and Focus on the Family, two of the Southern Poverty Law Center's rated hate groups, headline this list. The analysis was completed by the United Kingdom website opendemocracy.net for their 50-50 project, and it found that far-right or anti-abortion groups like Human Life International and the American Center for Law and Justice, as well as the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, were available as eligible charities on Amazon Smile. Another group found on the Amazon Smile site, the Family Leader, previously called being gay, quote, a public health risk, end quote. The Amazon Smile program allows customers on the site to choose a charity to support with a small percentage of the proceeds from their purchase. That's brought an estimated $215 million across thousands of organizations, including those anti-LGBT groups. Earlier this year, Amazon determined that the Southern Poverty Law Center-rated hate group Family Research Council was ineligible for the program. And here in California, the West Hollywood City Council unanimously approved a plan to paint a crosswalk in the colors of the transgender flag and to add a black and brown stripe to the existing rainbow crosswalks. The city has decided to show support for the trans community by picking a crosswalk on Santa Monica Boulevard in the historic gay neighborhood and painting them blue, pink, and white, the colors of the trans flag. The city currently has rainbow crosswalks at Santa Monica and San Vicente Boulevards, and in order to show solidarity with black and brown LGBTQ plus people, black and brown stripes will be added to those existing crosswalks. Amber Hikes, who created the inclusive black and brown striped version of the rainbow flag, said, quote, your city and your leaders have for decades been role modeling that it's possible for us to embrace equity, demand justice, and celebrate all of us. Updating your flag proclaims with everything that black lives more than matter. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And in studio, we have Robert Mueller and Jerry Dunn, newly together for just 2 years. And again, we want to welcome you both so much to the show. And thank you in advance for your time to share your lives with us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's great.
So we met Robert years and years ago. And I was so happy when I say, well, let's talk to Robert because he has this new relationship, this new life going on. So I called Robert, said yes to it. So excited to learn more about your life these days and to learn about your new love. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. Go ahead, Robert. Why don't you start and then we'll go to Jerry.
I am a Sonoma County native, background in journalism, and I did a little PR work for the Sonoma County Arts Council back in the day. But most of my career has been spent in retail, mostly managing bookstores. And at one point, I was involved with Scrap 6 in 1978. We were working against a Proposition 6. And a little bit earlier than that, I started with four or five other people, Sonoma County Lesbian and Gay News. And the first issue was actually typed on an old carbon ribbon typewriter, electric typewriter that was on loan. And then we found volunteers to do the typesetting, and I had a background in doing layout and stuff like that. And I sold all the advertising for it, distributed it, you know, things like that.
Is that pre We the People?
Yes, it is. Actually, the newspaper We the People came after that. What happened was that I got a job late 78 and couldn't do the advertising selling and all this other kind of stuff. And so I kind of dropped out of that. And then it was picked up by another one of our members, Sandy Lowe, who had been an instructor at Santa Rosa Junior College and was part of our group. And he continued it as We the People. So anyway, I did end up in retail, and I just kind of dropped out of political activism. And of course, AIDS was happening. So that was the time to, you know, hibernate for the decade.
Well, what he's not telling you, though, is that he's also quite the Sonoma County historian.
Oh, well, kind of.
He's posted a bunch of stuff on Facebook, and it was so funny. I had some friends over to meet him. And one of them at one point said, oh, you're that Robert Mueller. I follow your page all the time with all this history stuff about Healdsburg, et cetera. I told him he should send some stuff into the PD for when Gail Barron finally stopped.
I know what happened was I'd gotten on Facebook and hadn't really been doing much about it. And I went looking for pages, and there was this page for Santa Rosa history, and they hadn't really posted any, there hadn't been anything posted, you know, recently, and it was all kind of dull. And so I started Googling around and finding photos and posting things that way. And then I started doing it. I found this other page for Healdsburg where I grew up. And again, that was kind of dull. And so I started posting. And then after a year, without asking me, they made me an administrator for the page. So I post there very, very regularly.
What's the name?
You know you're from Healdsburg when. And then the Santa Rosa one is I remember Santa Rosa when.
And these are both on Facebook?
Yes.
Let the listeners hear a little bit more about you, Jerry, and what you're all about.
Well, I am not a native Sonoma County individual. I actually, I was born in Japan of military parents. And then as, you know, I think I was five, was raised in Southern California until I moved up here in 1997 to take a job. Or as I often think about it, I moved to paradise in 1997 because I do love it so up here. But, you know, it's interesting when you think about it from the aspect of, you know, I've lived here 23 years, but I'm still a newbie compared to a lot of folks around here who were basically born and have lived here all their life. I came up to take a job with the Sonoma County Human Services Department And I was their director for the last 5 years of my career until I retired in 2016. So, you know, after I retired, I was having a good time just sort of relaxing. And then, of course, the fire hit. And I was living with my partner, who I met in 2003. And we moved in together in Fountain Grove in 2006. And unfortunately, a few years before the fire, he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. And at the time of the fire, at least he was still mobile and able to comprehend some things. And we had a roommate who was a dear, dear friend. I always thought of him as an uncle-in-law. He was, I think at the time we moved in, he was in his mid-80s, and you never would have thought that because he went to the gym and worked out every day. He did all the gardening around the place. And the three of us, along with my son, who was, I think he might have been about 10 or something like that when we all moved in together in 2006. And he's grown and out of the house now. But then, unfortunately, they were both named Bill, coincidentally. And both of them died at the house in Monterio before we could get back to the rebuild house here in Santa Rosa. So that's sort of the background of how we got here.
How did you guys meet?
About 2 years ago. Well, it'll be 2 years this coming April. I belong to a gym. Radically. And one day my trainer said, well, I've been talking to this other trainer. He has a client who's around your age.
Well, how old are you?
Well, I'm 72, but Jerry is much, much younger.
Yeah, you cougar, you.
Anyway, so he said, so this other trainer has this client, and would you be interested in meeting him? I said, well, yeah, sure. And so I gave him my cell phone number, and Jerry ended up calling me. We had this like hour and a half conversation, and we made a date for dinner. I think it was like following Friday or Saturday at John Ash. And he interviewed me as to my movie history knowledge. To cut to the chase, he was like, he was living out in Monterio while his house was being built. And the following weekend, I went out to visit him, and then I ended up spending half of the week with him and half of the week in Santa Rosa.
Wow, that was fast, huh?
It was very fast, yes. We found we had a lot in common. We kind of react to the things in the same way. You know, we like the same movies. We cry at the same things, that kind of thing.
It must have felt so good to find somebody that you could relate to after your dry spell.
Exactly. And it was totally funny that our trainers would recognize who they were dealing with.
What about you, Jerry?
So the one comment. No. This is all good. So, you know, when our trainers talked about setting us up, right? Actually, what my trainer said is, well, I know this other trainer who has this gay man, and you're both about the same age, and you're both stubborn. So I think you'll get along just fine. And I thought, okay.
That's radically true.
Yes. And so then we did, you know, the obligatory phone call, right? You never even... Doesn't matter how old you are, there's still these steps to a relationship, right? So you call to make sure the other person isn't psychotic, right? and then once you feel you've passed that threshold, you meet for drinks, right? You never meet for dinner because you want to meet for drinks, because if it turns out you misjudge the situation, you can make a faster exit. And so we sort of went through all of that. But the thing I remember a little differently from Robert, he was showing off a bit because somehow it came up in conversation that we both liked old movies. And then he starts dropping all these names of these old movies and this director and that. And I thought, Well, he's showing off for me. He's letting me know he really, or he's testing me to see just how much my, because we're really big movie buffs. And I still remember I said towards the end, well, have you ever seen this movie called Mrs. Parkington with Greer Garson? And he said, no, I've never seen that. I said, well, you'll have to come out to Monterio sometime and watch it with me. And he said, okay, I'd love to do that. And then the cocktail hour sort of ended and we went our separate ways. And I thought to myself, well, Jerry, that was really stupid of you. He gave you this opening and you didn't even take it. And then bless his heart, he sent me a text, if I remember right, about how you were looking forward to coming out and seeing the movie. And I thought, well, now don't be an idiot twice, Jerry. And so I responded to him and that's how I got him to come out. Oh, the fact that we decided to live together, we were sort of thrown together because of COVID, believe it or not. You know, well, moved into the house at the end of March, just when all the shutdown and everything was happening and the shelter in place orders, the first ones. And we were spending all our time together anyway. And then we just sort of looked at each other and we said, well, if we have to shelter in place, why don't we just do it together? And so that's what we did. So there was no dramatic, you know, will you move in with me? Will you not? It just happened. And a wonderful thing it is, too. Wow.
It is.
You think about the timing of COVID and shelter in place and your house being built, all that came together. I mean, your house got finished in March. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. You know, I was one of those people that when the house completely burned down, everything was lost. And that was true of the entire neighborhood that I lived in as well. But I was able to move fairly quickly, in part because I needed to find a builder and get moving, because I figured the longer I waited, the more difficult it was going to be to find somebody who didn't already have their plate full. So the house burnt down in October 2017, and I signed the first contract in December 2017.
And so it took a long time for the house to get built. I mean, from December 2017 to March 2020.
Yeah, I will tell you, for anyone, the irony of this was when the two Bills and I first talked about moving in together, the older Bill was all gung-ho, let's buy a plot of land and we'll get a prefab house that we can just build. And I said, nothing doing. I don't want anything to do with building a house. It always takes longer than you think it's going to, and it always costs more than you think it's going to. I don't want anything to do with having to jump through all those hoops. And then, of course, I ended up stuck doing it anyway. And then Robert was a lot of help as we got towards the end, because even as the house was being built, I was thinking, you know, how the hell am I going to furnish? It's a 3,200 square foot house. It's not small. And I thought, I don't have the money to furnish this. And we ended up, Robert and I went down to Palm Springs several times and found these estate stores down there, which was great, right? Because Palm Springs has all these older gay people and they die and nobody knows what to do with their stuff, right? So, all goes to these estate stores where you get this very tasteful furniture, right? For like nothing compared to what it was. And we actually
mildly different furniture, I should say, too.
Yeah. We actually have four storage units in Palm Springs full of stuff. So that was, in a way, that was turned out to be fortuitous, because after we moved in here and everything was shut down, right, you couldn't go to stores to get furniture or anything. The furniture was already here. They actually built around the furniture towards the end to finish the house.
Say more about they built around the furniture. Give us an example.
Well, my builder towards the end said, all right, we're going to be ready for final walkthrough. I think the first date he gave me was Christmas of 2019. Christmas Eve. I remember that.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I wrote him back and I said, no, I'm not doing a walkthrough on Christmas Eve. You know, let's do it a little later. So then it was going to be January. And I notified the folks in Palm Springs to start planning to move the furniture up because the storage place also did moves and deliveries. Then the builder rescheduled, and they rescheduled like three times. And then they rescheduled for, I believe, March 1st. It was supposed to be ready. And then I just said to them, well, you know what? I am not rescheduling this furniture delivery anymore. It's coming. And it's going to be in the house, and you guys will have to work around it. And they actually were very good about that. All the furniture was sort of like grouped in the middle of the room, and it had all these big plastic tarps over it. So they could do all the stuff they needed to do for finishing work and already.
What he's not saying is that all the furniture was grouped in one room, covered with tarps and so forth.
Two. It was in the family room and the living room, remember?
Okay. All right. But still, it wasn't set up.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, COVID sort of forced us. Other people said, oh my God, what am I doing now that I have to shelter in place? Well, we were arranging furniture and hanging art and doing all this stuff. I mean, nobody, I think, when they move into a house, has it all put together in like 2 weeks. But we did because there wasn't anything else to do.
Wow. That must have been an exciting time, those 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was. It was fun.
Did you guys get along?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're looking at me like, what is she talking about? You know, they say remodels. I mean, this is a build, but they say remodels is one of the most stressful things for a couple to get through.
I gave a little bit of advice in the final build, but Jerry had enough advisors as it was. He had a friend who's an architect who was advising him, and someone else who was doing some of the extraneous build and landscaping and so forth. So I would kind of pipe in as much as I can and give my own take on whatever was going on. But we never had any big, you know, arguments about that kind of stuff.
That's wonderful. So listen, so shelter in place. And we heard earlier that you both were stubborn men.
So why are you saying that in the past tense?
So here we are in December after the 2 weeks of remodeling and, you know, putting up furniture and stuff, you know, doing that stuff. How is it to be in shelter in place, this new relationship? Really, it's new, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that you both have this personality of being stubborn. I'm just curious, how does it go day to day?
There's a give and take, I think. We both know we're opinionated. You always hear that expression, you choose your battles or something. We don't really have battles or really big conflicts in regard to, you know, different things like that. No, because I think we're both appreciative of our situation, our housing situation, but certainly our situation in terms of having found one another. You know, we've both had previous relationships and have learned from those relationships and know what works.
Yeah, I think we give each other, well, for one thing, it's a large house. And it sounds funny to say that, but it's like, we give each other a lot of space. I was never someone who wanted to have a partner who was like joined at the hip with me and would constantly be saying, well, you need to spend more time with me. I wanted a partner that would sort of, you know, let me be me, you know, and I would let him be him. And so most of the time during the days, we're doing our separate things. And then we always come together in the evenings to watch the news and eat dinner and, you know, just typical family stuff. So the evenings sort of belong to us as a couple. And the days, sometimes we're a couple and sometimes we're just off doing totally separate things.
So we're about ready for our music break. And Jerry, you composed a symphony, like I said in the introduction. I'd like to play a little bit of the first movement. Could you talk just a little bit about how you came to write the symphony?
Well, it was one of the things when COVID first hit and we had to shelter in place, right? Everybody, I think, sort of started doing hobbies and things like that. I've been writing songs for years, and I have a digital workstation that makes it very easy for me to do that. So I decided to create this symphony about the fire, and there are four movements to it. The first movement is about life before the fire. The second movement is the actual fire. The third movement is afterwards. And then the fourth movement is the rebirth, coming back from all that death and desolation.
So this is the first movement from a fire symphony. Enjoy, everybody.
Thank you.
So if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and we are talking with Robert Mueller and Jerry Dunn. And we just listened to Jerry's first movement of his symphony, a fire symphony, and it's glorious. We could only play a little bit of it, but can you talk to us a little bit about your life as a composer?
I've been a musician for as long as I can remember, but the instrument I'm really good at is the drums, and you can't do a lot of musical things with drums. So I sort of taught myself the basics of piano and chord structure, and enough that I would know how to make the things that are in my head come out sound like I wanted them to. And then after the fire, all my musical equipment was destroyed. And so I bought a new digital workstation. It's called a Genos, and it looks like a full-sized piano, but what it does is it records, it does multi-track, so you can do layer upon layer, which is how I created the symphony, because I've been doing a lot of pop songs with it. And I was doing some work here at my computer and listening to Dvorak's New World Symphony, which is one of my favorites. And I said to myself, you know, I wonder if I could write a symphony. So I started thinking about that. And I am familiar with the structure of a symphony. And then I thought, well, they always say write about what you know. And actually one article I read said the sadder, the better. And so I went immediately to the fire. I thought, you know, that if ever there was something that lended itself to the musicality of a symphony, it was the Tubbs fire and what happened to so many people here. And honestly, at the time I was thinking about putting this together, I did think to myself, you know, the important thing for people, anybody who hears that and hopefully walks away with the sense that no matter how awful things get, they get better. You recover, persevere, you move on, you can be happy again. And I'm very proud of this piece. I think it's best thing I've ever done. You know, in terms of the writing process, it was amazing to me. It took literally, I think, a day was all to get in my head what the main theme of the symphony was going to be and how the four movements were going to interrelate. Then it took me like a month to actually record the thing because it's piece by piece by piece. And unfortunately, I'm one of those writers when I'm doing things that I think more is more, right? Not less is more. So it took some time, but I was really happy with how it came out. And when I've played it for friends and people I knew who had lost their homes, and I said, you know, is this right? Is this the emotions that hopefully the music evokes? Does it fit? And people have said, yes, it does. So I'm still sort of wondering what to do with it, right? I played it for a neighbor who's on my homeowner association board. And he wants me to send it to the Santa Rosa Symphony and get them to play it. And, you know, and I very well might do that. But at least initially, I wrote it for me, right? It's a very sort of cathartic thing. The fourth movement is all about Robert and Aww. The house being rebuilt and how you can put your life together.
It's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Jerry.
We're both missing up at the same time, I have to tell you. Even though we're in different rooms.
That's what I'm noticing, that you're being affected by the storytelling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bringing it back. The music is incredible. So, Robert, you were a witness to this journey of writing the music, or were you not around then? Or?
Well, oh, no, I was around. He has a music room downstairs, and he would go down to the music room and, you know, work on it for, you know, hours at a time. I knew it was going to be great, and it is.
Well, I dragged him down there. I would yell up the stairs, Robert, get out here and listen to this piece now. You know, I think especially in this time of COVID, right? People who are creative are very lucky, right? Because they have the ability to spend their time being creative, or if people like to do household projects, anything like that. I feel it's got to be tougher for people who I think are by themselves and don't have any of those outlets, right? And so I've always considered myself and Robert very lucky.
Yeah, because you have that creative juices in you. That's wonderful.
I was just thinking of two things. You said you didn't really know what you wanted to do with your symphony. And you also said COVID and the really good time for people who are creative. And the thought that came up to me is, it's such a paradox, isn't it? You had this devastation. You had this, you lost your home, and then your partner died while you were in Monterio. And then your best friend slash uncle died while you're in Monterio. I mean, that is a huge amount of loss. Just one of those would be huge. Right. And so for those three things to happen, and then you had to navigate building your home with all your grief, that is so hard on the soul. And yet you took this beautiful four movement symphony that just came out of you, poured out of you. And now we have this thing that you can, you know, not necessarily hold in your hand, but it is a thing that came out of your devastation that is so powerful mm-hmm. and amazing, that would have never come to fruition had you not been through this horrible, terrifying time. It's so, like, talk a little bit about that.
Well, the thing with my partner, Bill, we were together for 15 years. Unfortunately, as you know, there is no cure for Alzheimer's. The fact that he had it at such an early age, he was also 7 years older than me. He was in his 60s when he was diagnosed. So I knew I was going to lose him sooner, not later. And while he still had the ability to think straight, for lack of a better term, he had said to me, well, you need to go out and find somebody else. It's just not in your nature to be alone. And that's true. It's not. I've always just believed very much in sharing my life with somebody. And I know some people get along fine being by themselves, and that's great. But I'm not one of those. And as we were going through this process with the bills, you know, my Bill had gotten to the point where he was bedridden. He couldn't speak. He couldn't eat or drink without assistance. And while the experts will say to you, and the thing to remember about Alzheimer's, right, is that every single person has different manifestations of the disease. And while I've often was told, well, he doesn't really know what's going on, he absolutely knew what was going on. I could see it in his eyes. And I really felt towards the end like his eyes were saying, do something, you know, release me from this hell somehow. And fortunately, he had, we each had an advanced health care directive. And one of the things that it said was that if he couldn't eat or drink on his own, he was not to be force-fed and he was not to be hydrated. And I had some caretakers that were helping me with him. My big thing is he wasn't dying in a hospital. Even if it was a rented home, he was going to die in that house. And I remember this on Thursday, I told the caretakers, and I did the same thing. I said, we're not giving him water anymore. We're not going to force feed him. We'll offer it. If he doesn't take it, I'd still say it's his decision. And he didn't. And that was Thursday. And he died Monday morning at 7 a.m. And so I guess that's a very roundabout way of saying there was some expectation of that loss. And you know, biggest mixed bag, right? Because there was also some relief. He was out of pain. He wasn't suffering anymore. that responsibility was off my shoulder, because anyone who's ever been a caregiver will tell you, no matter how saintly people may say, oh, that is, there are times you resent it, right? It's just like, oh my God, this is my whole life right now, right? So I had this mixed bag, you know, I was sad that he was gone, but I was happy that I'd been able to help him pass, you know, shorten his suffering. I do believe the fire hastened his demise. He never understood, even though he had walked through the wreckage with us, he never understood that the house was destroyed. He thought we were on vacation for some reason in Monterio, and he would say, now, when are we going back home from the vacation? Just sort of say soon. And then our elderly roommate and good friend, he was 92 and he had an ankle wound. And honestly, by the time he showed it to me, because he always wore long pants, it was pretty far gone. The doctors finally said to him, if you want to keep living, we're going to have to amputate the leg. The infection's gone into the bone. And he rightly said, I'm 92 years old. How long am I going to hang around anyway? Forget it. Just send me home to die. And so my Bill died on a Monday at 7 a.m. And the older Bill died on a Monday at 7 a.m, 3 weeks later. And they were both gone. And that, again, it was one of those things of, because we knew it was going to happen. Again, I didn't want him to die in a hospital, right? I wanted him to die at home, die in Monterio. My biggest disappointment, because I was trying so hard to rebuild this house that we were all so happy in, so they could come back to it too. And in point of fact, I mean, they didn't make it, right? They were both gone like 9 months after the fire. So then, and I will say after that, there was a period of time where I was trying my best to be positive, but I was sad, you know, I was grieving. I was stuck out here in this house in Monterio. It was a nice house, but there were vacation rentals, right? It was a vacation rental house that had, the owners had taken off the market to help fire victims. And so there was nobody around. I mean, it, you know, winter in Monterio could be fairly desolate, right? And there weren't a lot of places to go or anything like that. But I did and used it. I had freedom now. I had the ability to come and go as I needed to go. I didn't have anybody else to worry about it except for me. So I started going to the gym every, you know, 5 days a week. I just did the drive from Santa Rosa to Monterio and just really focused on trying to rebuild my life. And we did a big celebration of life for the two Bills. In Bill died in July, the other Bill died in August, and in September, I did this big celebration of life at Sobraja Wineries, and it was just a kick-ass party. It was not, you know, we're going to sit around and mope and eulogize. I gave a toast to each of them. And that was the only speaking that was allowed. We had about 100 people, and I just feel like I sent them off very well with my Bill on this shoulder going, yes, this is exactly what I want. I want something classy. He was a bit of an elitist, you know, he thought he had his opinions about everything, right? So I knew I had to do it upright for him. The other Bill was on this shoulder going, the hell are you spending all this money for? Are you crazy? And I told you I didn't want anything. And I thought, oh, well, so at least it was a twofer. So I'm sure if he was looking down on me, he said, well, at least he didn't do it twice. and spend even more money.
Oh, what a story. Oh,
that is beautiful. Yeah. And so that's how you came, your trainer came to talk to Robert's trainer.
That's right.
Well, that's I mean, have you both praised these two trainers for getting you guys together?
Oh, yes.
Oh, oh God.
Jerry still has the same trainer. I my trainer left the gym, and I also stopped going to the gym. So. But he has the same trainer.
Actually, I'm so delighted that they are both so happy, the trainers are, that they made this happen.
Well, we are at the end of our show, and we are going to go out with your fourth movement of your symphony, the Rebirth Movement. I highly recommend people to hear the whole symphony. If people are interested, are you willing to share this with them, or is this like a project on hold? Wait for Santa Rosa Symphony to play it.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm perfectly willing to share it. I have no interest in making money off of this or anything like that. I would like people to hear it just so that they know that there's light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak.
How would people get in touch with you if they wanted, if they're interested?
It's all right to give them my email. Do you want me to, should I give it right now?
Sure.
It's the letter J, DUNN, 8257, at cs.com, charliesam.com.
All right. So if anyone's interested in hearing the whole four movements of the Fire Symphony, get in touch with Jerry. And we're going to go out with the fourth movement. But before we go out, we always ask our guests for words of advice. Robert?
Well, I think my advice was to stay open and realize when opportunities come up that you take the opportunities, that you don't shy away and say, oh, well, no, I'm not comfortable with that, because those opportunities are out there.
Beautiful. Thank you. And Jerry, what about you? Any advice you have?
Obviously, in the face of adversity, you have to walk through that process. But it gets better if you're willing to face it head on and just work through it. You know, the vernacular term is, with all this manure around, there must be a pony somewhere. That's basically it. But you can't shut down. If you shut down, you will sort of eat yourself alive, I think.
Well said. Well said. I want to thank you both, Robert and Jerry, for being here today. Oh, we had so much more to talk about, you guys. Oh, it's been great. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We want everyone to remember, like Jerry and Robert, you too can be living proof that through sharing your craft, your passion, your creative expression, you can make our world a better world. This is Diane and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.
Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Music with Cheryl Kabanuck. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on Radio 91. And later this month, on the fifth Sunday of January, your Outbeat Radio team will come together to talk about our hopes and plans for the coming year. Join us on Sunday, January 31st, for a special Outbeat Extra. And remember, if you missed one of our shows or simply want to listen again, many of our past shows are available for on-demand play anytime at outbeatradio.com. Did you get a new mobile device as a holiday gift this year? If so, you need to download the KRCB mobile app. You can take Outbeat Radio and your other favorite KRCB radio programs with you to listen anywhere in the world with internet access. The app is free to download and use. It's available right now for your Apple or Android device.
Show me how to love. Maybe I'm going through a drought. You don't even have to do too much. You can turn me on with just a touch. Baby, I look around since it is cold and empty. No one's around to judge me. I can see clearly when you're
Radio 91 KRCB FM Windsor and K215 CQ Santa Rosa, a service of Northern California Public Media. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.